keeping people out of neighborhoods, of destroying our public housing, destroying public health care, destroying public education. Those things are happening in every community across this country, and there is a real lesson here for people. Not only should they give us solidarity in New Orleans, because we need that, particularly on July 4th for the next thing, but to understand that what is happening to New Orleans is what we have done to the people of Iraq, what we have done as a country to places outside of our country, and what we are doing maybe slower, a little more subtly, in every major city in this country. The people of New Orleans say, you know, if our government is treating us this way, can you imagine how they are treating the people of Iraq? Can you imagine how they're treating the people of Afghanistan? Can you imagine what's going on in Central and Latin America? And there is a lesson here, is a teaching lesson for us about the priorities of our country, the priorities of the people in power, and the way that they are willing to marginalize and just discard the needs of poor and working folks in this community, but in communities all across this country. Why do we have a minimum wage of $5.15 an hour, you know, in this day and age in the richest country in the history of the world? Why do we have people that are living in abandoned housings without electricity, without water, and at the same time we are going to destroy 5,000 units of public housing? This is a disgrace. But these people are saying they're doing it for our good. They're doing it because they know what's better. It's paternalism. It's so-called tough love. It is an attack on the people who built this country and the people who built our communities.
Bill Quigley, law professor at Loyola University. A census was done looking at the 4 months after the Hurricane Katrina that found New Orleans has become considerably whiter, older, less poor. Not because people have more money there, but because those who are poor are no longer there. Do you think that there is a kind of plan here to use New Orleans as a social experiment to look at a privatized city in this country?
I think absolutely that there is. New Orleans has become the national laboratory for charter schools. We have more charter schools than we have anything else, and that's continuing to grow. We have become the laboratory for destruction of a public health care system. We are now at the point where we are the laboratory for the destruction of public housing. Every one of our public institutions that were destroyed have not been rebuilt, and that is done consciously in an attempt to privatize everything. And privatization makes sense for people who have resources. It makes sense for people who want to own those resources, but it does not make sense for people who have a sense of community, of the common good, and a role of government to provide an opportunity for people who are left out of the normal maximization of profit forces that are in the market. And New Orleans, if people don't understand it, what is happening to New Orleans is coming to your community. Maybe it's going to come slower. Maybe it's going to come a little more subtle, but it is the laboratory to take what the lessons that our country is imposing on the rest of the world and to plant them in the United States, and they are calling them success. That's the thing. They are destroying our community. They are displacing our elderly, our disabled, our poor, and they are saying it is success, and this is what we have to do in order to save ourselves.
Bill Quigley, the black population in New Orleans has gone from over a third of the population being black to just about a fifth of the population. What about the right of return? Do you see people returning?
Well, the numbers aren't exactly correct. It was about two-thirds, a little over two-thirds black, and it's a little bit less than 50% at this point. But everybody is asking for the right to return. They're starting to demand the right to return. The people who are back, who, as you said, are whiter, more affluent, more old than the way the city was before, they're perfectly happy with the city that they have now. And they do not want their quality of life diminished or diluted by letting back in those people. And those people are the people who are in public schools. Those people are the people who are in public housing. Those people are the people who need public health care. But those people are also the people who clean our streets, clean our hotels, cook our food, take care of our parents, are the cashiers, are the servers, are the waitresses, the working folks who keep our lives together. So we want their services, but we don't want to have them live in our community anymore. And so it has a racial angle, has a very definite class angle, and it also has a significant corporate privatization angle as well.
Bill Quigley, I want to thank you for being with us. If people want to follow what's happening in New Orleans, read articles, learn about projects that are there for rebuilding, is there a place you can recommend that they go on the web?
There are a couple of places they could go. There's a one called justiceforneworleans.org, which is all one word. Common Ground Collective maintains information on that.
Bill Quigley,
we'll
link to these sites at democracynow.org. And I want to
thank you so much
for being with us, law professor at Loyola University, director of the Law Clinic, and the Gillis Law Long Poverty Center at Loyola. That does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdo-Kadous, John Hamilton, Elizabeth Press, Yoruba Richin, Aaron Mate, Frank Lopez, Mike DeFilippo, and Nick Marsilio, our engineers. Also, special thanks to Uri Gallet, our director. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Almost not off the wall tonight. Almost off the air, in fact. Actually, I think we're broadcasting at something like 25% power because of some shenanigans the local power company performed last night. Ever have that happen? It's happened to me with computers and all kinds of electrical fixtures and things like that. But occasionally, the company now is known as LIPA, Long Island Power Authority. They used to be known as LILCO, Long Island Lighting Company. And Long Island Power Authority, by the way, took over when the Shoreham Nuclear Plant forced practical bankruptcy and everybody was against it. And anyway, that's a whole story in of itself. We've talked about it in years past. But their practices remain the same. Their hardware remains the same. What they occasionally do is just send all this voltage down the line, fry equipment, things like that. I understand what they were doing last night was making it so that our transmitter was going on and off and on and off, and eventually something fried. And, well, our chief engineer had to spend a good part of the night over there trying to figure out how to get us back on the air. So I guess we're lucky we're at 25% power. But boy, it just goes to show, you know, how fleeting it all is. At any moment, it can all be taken away. Oh, and this reminds me, too. We got a letter from one listener that says, something that's been bothering me when I listen to Off the Wall, whenever you play background music while you're talking and then you pause for a moment, you fade up the music. Actually, I didn't do it before. It was a natural upswing in the volume. And then you fade down when you start to talk again. I don't know if you feel this improves the mood you're setting, but from my end, it is distracting as all hell. All right, is this better? Do you like this better, huh? Nice stark tones? Silence in the back? Well, I hear static in the background. It's because I'm listening to the air signal, but... but, yeah, this is it. Black and white, my voice and nothing. Yeah, it's kind of ugly now, isn't it? You sort of wish there was a bed of music to protect you, to protect your ears. Oh, how quick we are to pass judgment. All right, I'm sensing a lot of contrition out there, a lot of people feeling that they've judged too quickly, too harshly. So there, music's back. Of course, everything, you know, in moderation. There comes a point where it just becomes a little bit too much and you feel like you're sort of competing with the music, and you don't want that because it's hard for people to understand what it is you're saying, and also it's extremely annoying. Yeah, so you gotta find the right level. It's all about levels. Anyway, continuing with this letter from, how do you pronounce this name? Zeroreth. People have the weirdest names and they write into us. I swear, you combine radio listeners with hackers and phone freaks and people like that, and you just have this incredible combination of numbers and letters and weird characters that only appear on computer keyboards. I mean, who decided that, okay, here's a computer, we're going to put this thing called a tilde on it. You know, you've never needed it before, it's never been on a typewriter, but here it is. Have fun. And while we're at it, a backslash, because the forward slash isn't confusing enough. We want two of them. Oh, you want more? Here's more. How about a quote that goes in the other direction? I still can't figure out when to use that. And occasionally people send me mail where they open it with one of those backward quotes and they close it with the closing regular quote. The single quotes. And that might look all nice and pretty, but when you put that into a word processor that doesn't understand what it is you're trying to do, you get all this weirdness, and God forbid you put it into a desktop publishing suite of some sort. I gotta tell you, the nightmares we go through editing articles for 2600 when people give all this weird kind of formatting with characters that that software does not understand sometimes. You wind up with little graphical characters and reverse text and all sorts of other nightmares that we're lucky we catch most of the time, but sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't, and it's all because of these stupid characters that for some reason somebody dictated that we need these on our keyboard. Now, yeah, I understand if you're writing a computer program, you need all sorts of ways to express yourself, because God forbid, 26 letters in the English language is not enough, plus periods and commas and parentheses and things like that. No, you need more, fine. But you guys get your own keyboard. You get a programmer's keyboard. Speak your own language, you do anyway. Let the rest of us have English. Let the rest of us have letters. And all this nonsense where people spell their names with pipes and brackets and arrows. Well, there's no arrows, but you know that you can make arrows. All sorts of weirdness like that. It just drives me insane. But I'm sorry, your name doesn't really offend me in that manner. It's just spelled weird. It's Zeroeth. Zeroeth. There. No special characters or anything weird like that. Just a strange spelling, which we get a lot of. A lot of creative spellings. You ever see these people have nicknames? Everybody gets a nickname in the hacker world. That's how it works. A lot of people in the mainstream media think that means that we're all criminals and we don't want our real identity to be found. Let me tell you, anyone's real identity can be found in a matter of 5 minutes. I know, because I do it all the time. People say, oh, you can never figure out who I am. Inside of a minute, just by Googling, I can find a paper they wrote in sixth grade, which some idiot decided, probably them, to put online for the rest of the world to see. Or they have some kind of a MySpace account or a live journal or something ridiculous like that. Or God forbid you're on Facebook. where everything about you is laid out there for the whole world to see. You're defined. There's no mystery anymore, nothing left to the imagination. People posting their innermost desires, who they like, who they dislike, what they would like to do, what would make them happy, what would make them sad. I mean, come on, what more do you need to totally drive somebody insane? You know what they're afraid of, you know their phobias, because they post them. Oh, this is great for the Hannibal Lecters of the world. How can we torture little Jimmy? Well, he's afraid of spiders. Okay then, let's get a whole truck full of spiders and throw him in. Yeah, then he'll tell us where the treasure is buried. So, yeah, you have all these people doing this. You have all these people putting their lives on display. And all of a sudden, everything is different in our society. No privacy anymore. So yeah, the handles don't really protect you. They don't really keep you from being identified. They're just kind of cool to have, and everybody in the hacker world likes to have a handle of some sort. But occasionally there are these people who spell their name wrong. They initially come up with a word. Like, God forbid you try to spell the word privilege in the hacker community, in the computer community even. Nobody can do it. Nobody can spell it right. They're putting E's where E's don't belong, leaving out letters. Now imagine you made a nickname for yourself, like the Privileged One or something silly like that, and you spell it wrong. But it's too late. That's your name. Your name is based on something that you messed up. What better way to define somebody? And that's another reason why I think we should pick our own names, because it sort of is a revelation of what we're all about and whether we're very intelligent or not. I'm not using this to annoy people, by the way. I'm just using it because I've totally run out of things to say. Oh, I remember now. Yes, it's been one of those crazy weeks again with the World Cup going on. A lot of people are coming up to me wondering why in God's name I am so enthralled with this World Cup thing. And it's not just me. It's not just me. The whole world is watching this, and I think that's one of the reasons why I get into it so much. Because the whole world is watching. Yeah, I've always liked that chant, but I mean, everybody in all four corners of the world and whatever other ones we haven't discovered yet finds this fascinating. What else can you, apart from a world war, what else is there that everybody can agree on like that? They don't agree on who the best team is. They don't agree on who the best player is. They don't even agree on the scores sometimes because the refereeing is so bad, like it was with the U.S.-Italy game the other day. I'm not saying the U.S. should have won. I'm saying that it was some unfair calls there. I mean, the only goal that the U.S. scored was actually scored by Italy. Kind of accidentally kicked it into the net. But, for the most part, it's been great. The games have been amazing. They've been very exciting. But I think what I really like about it, because I've been trying to figure this out, I'm not a sports person. And other people are trying to figure it out too. What's wrong with Emmanuel? Why is he following the World Cup all of a sudden? Because he doesn't care about sports. He's not into this organized sports business. Well, one of the reasons which I explained last week was I'm watching the British feed, which somehow makes it feel better. Because they don't talk as much, because the screen is bigger. And by bigger, I mean they don't actually come and expand my TV set. What they do is they don't have all this crap on it. And believe me, it's no end of crap that they put on ESPN as far as extra stuff. They do this for everything. You notice this on television these days? They do this for everything. You have to know what it is you're watching. You have to know what channel you're watching it on. You have to know what's coming up next. You need dancing animation because, your eyes must be wandering. And God forbid there's a thunderstorm in New Jersey, because then they're going to cut in and take up half the screen telling you that. It just gets insane. So I'm watching a real game with a full screen and a British guy talking who doesn't keep talking all the time. In fact, it's only one guy. Only one guy. When's the last time you ever turned on a sporting event in this country, involving teams, that is, maybe for golf they can do this, where only one person was calling the game? I mean, that takes real skill to just be able to announce the game. That's what it's supposed to be all about. But instead, in this country, we get jibber-jabber back and forth, everybody talking to each other about statistics, memories, personal anecdotes of all sorts, and everyone kind of forgets the game that's going on there. That's the whole point. That's why we're here. And sometimes it's good to not say anything because there's really nothing to say. So that's one of the reasons. That's one of the things that draws me in. But I think what really draws me in is just the diversity. You see teams from all over the world. You see a team from Ecuador. You see a team from Japan, from Korea, from Germany, of course, from the United States. You see teams from Ghana. You see teams from Trinidad and Tobago. By the way, yes, I know a lot of people wrote in to say I keep pronouncing it Tobago. It's hard because when I'm reading it, I think Tobago because, I don't know, it's just the way it looks. But it's definitely Trinidad and Tobago. That's no question. And they're doing pretty good. They're doing pretty good overall. They have a chance. In fact, they're playing today, so don't anybody tell me anything. In fact, they've already played today. I don't know what happened. They were playing Paraguay, and if they were to win that game, and let's see, if Sweden were to lose, I think they would go through. They would go through to the knockout stage, which is when 32 teams become 16. It gets so crazy and complicated. And that's one of the other reasons that I find it fascinating. For instance, today is the first day of what's known as the doubleheaders. You start off with 32 teams in eight groups of four, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and H. Every team plays every other team in their group, so every team plays three games. Now, when it gets time for the third game, well, you have things happening where the outcome of one game is going to affect where the teams in the other half of the group wind up. So they play the games at the same exact time. So today, Group A had Ecuador and Germany and Poland and Costa Rica playing at the same time. Not all four of them together. One game in one city, Ecuador, Germany, and another game in a different city, Poland, Costa Rica. The reason for that is because if one team won, and all you needed was a tie to get through, you wouldn't try as hard to win. Or if, as happened last year, or last World Cup, I think it was with Mexico and Italy, both teams would go through to the next round if they had a tie. So they actually found out the score. The other game had ended a few minutes early, and they found out the score. And they spent something like 8 minutes just kicking the ball back and forth between each other. It was disgusting. There was no game. Now imagine if they had done that for the entire game. That can happen if you know the outcome in advance. So that's why they do this. They have 4 days where they play four games, two of them at the same time. It's really, it's different. It's not what we used to. And then goes to what's known as the knockout stage. What they used to do back in, I think, the 80s was move them into a couple of other groups and then play more games. But now what they do is they simply have the first place team from Group A play the second place team from Group B and vice versa. And whoever wins that game goes on to the quarterfinals. And then they have the semifinals. And then they have something else that we don't have here in this country. They have the third place game. Yeah, the third place game. Now, what that is basically is the team that the two teams that lose the semifinals, they get to play. It's a whole new competition that we don't even think of here. And it's to determine who is third place and who is fourth place. So you have all these different things. But I think what really draws me more than anything is just the facial expressions of people from all over the world. How radically different they are, how people treat each other with respect on the field. I've never seen such camaraderie. What other sport do you have players from competing sides occasionally hugging each other or helping each other up? Happens all the time there. So yeah, once every 4 years, it's kind of cool. And that's one of the reasons why I follow it. But I got to tell you, it's been frustrating as hell trying to get through the days without somebody ruining it. Because what's happening is they play the games in Germany, and the first game is at 8:30 in the morning. Even I'm not up at 8:30 in the morning. When I say that, I mean not until 8:30 in the morning. So that game I don't see live. And then another one takes place, I think, at around noon, and another one after that at around 3 o'clock. So the only way to catch up is to record them and then play them back while you're doing work. All right, that's great, but I've been getting the games completely spoiled for really bizarre reasons. You know, people you never speak about sports with all of a sudden say, wow, USA really got demolished today. Or the best was last week after Off the Hook. We were all assembling in the lobby of BAI, and I was telling people, yeah, you know, I'm trying to just have these games on in the background and experience the thrill of it without knowing the outcome, because that really adds to it a lot. So if anybody here, not that any of you are into sports, if anybody here knows anything about what happened today, especially with Germany-Poland, because I want to see that game, that's going to be a great game, please don't tell me. Everybody understood. Everybody, you know, gave us a little lecture, and everybody respected that. Then we have Walter, who is one of the guys on the show, suddenly join us after getting off the phone. I don't know why people make phone calls after the radio show, I guess to say, yeah, I survived. I made it through the hour. And he just got off the phone, and he asked, what are you talking about? And like an idiot, I said the World Cup. So, oh, yeah, Poland really blew it today, didn't they? Thank you. Thank you so much. After all that, that game is now ruined. And that game was actually ruined twice, because on the way home later that night, I didn't know how much they lost by. Maybe it's still a good game. Maybe, who knows? I'm buying something at the supermarket. I go into the store and buy something, minding my own business, get to the cash register, and it's one of these stupid cash registers that, again, feels that your attention span is such that you need something to focus on every 2 seconds, and you can't possibly just stand in a line. So this thing is playing music videos and giving stock reports and horoscopes. And by the way, Germany beat Poland in the last minute. Oh, thank you so much. Now a cash register has ruined the game for me. Ruined what was left of the game. So now not only do I know that Germany won, I know when they won. Now keep in mind, this is after I've spent all day not listening to radio, not reading websites that have news on them, which is hard to do when you have to do two radio shows that are based on that kind of thing. Not talking to people who don't know when to shut up, you know, things like that I've spent the whole day doing. And yet still, somehow, the word filters out. If I wanted to know the scores, I don't think I could find out this easily. So, yeah, it's been frustrating. It's been really frustrating. And it's happened several times, too. I'm not going to say names anymore because I don't want to get people... The Walter thing was funny. It really was. Other teams have similarly had the results blown by other people. One instance, for instance, I asked somebody a particular game, please don't tell me the result. I know you're a fan of this team. I know you probably want to tell me, but please just let me see the game. And they said, fine, I respect that. You can come cry with me later. Oh, thank you so much. Cry with you later, that means your team lost. I'm not stupid, you know. Ugh. So, I think the only solution is just not to talk to anybody. Turn off all possible ways that the world can filter in. Or get up early and watch the game at 8:30. Here's a letter from the head of the UN, Secretary General Kofi Annan. He's writing about the World Cup. Yeah, get this. This is amazing. You may wonder what a Secretary General of the United Nations is doing writing about football, but in fact, the World Cup makes us in the UN green with envy. That's right. At the pinnacle, as the pinnacle of the only true global game played in every country by every race and religion. It is one of the few phenomena as universal as the United Nations. You could even say it's more universal. FIFA has 207 members, FIFA being the governing body of world football. 207 members. We have only 191. But there are far better reasons to be envious. First, the World Cup is an event in which everybody knows where their team stands and what it did to get there. They know who scored and how and in what minute of the game. They know who missed the open goal. They know who served the penalty. I wish we had more of that sort of competition in the family of nations. Countries openly vying for the best standing in the table of respect for human rights and trying to outdo one another in child survival rates or enrollment in secondary education. States parading their performance for all the world to see. Governments being held accountable for what actions led them to that result. Second, the World Cup is an event which everybody on the planet loves talking about. It's true. If I'm talking about it, that must be true. Dissecting what their team did right and what it could have done differently, not to mention the other side's team. Just to break away for a second, that's where I differ. I don't have a team. I basically pick teams based on either their underdog status or if they play particularly well. For instance, I saw Argentina play, and I think they're going to win this thing because they just played a beautiful game, an absolutely amazing game. And if they have that kind of footwork, they're actually going to be better than Brazil this time. That's just my opinion. Ghana, I really hope Ghana gets through. I really do, because they're playing the U.S. next, so I guess I'm on Ghana's side for this one. But it's just nice to see a team succeed where they're not expected to succeed. And same for Trinidad and Tobago. I hope they get through as well. Okay, continuing here. People sitting in cafes anywhere from Buenos Aires to Beijing, debating the finer points of games endlessly, revealing an intimate knowledge not only of their own national teams, but many of the others too, and expressing themselves on the subject with as much clarity as passion. Normally tongue-tied teenagers suddenly become eloquent, confident, and dazzlingly analytical experts. I wish we had more of that sort of conversation in the world at large. Citizens consumed by the topic of how their country could do better on the Human Development Index, or in reducing the number of carbon emissions, or new HIV infections. Third, the World Cup is an event which takes place on a level playing field where every country has a chance to participate on equal terms. Only two commodities matter in this game, talent and teamwork. I wish we had more levelers like that in the global arena. Free and fair exchanges without the interference of subsidies, barriers, or tariffs. Every country getting a real chance to field its strengths on the world stage. Fourth, the World Cup is an event which illustrates the benefits of cross-pollination between peoples and countries. More and more national teams now welcome coaches from other countries who bring new ways of thinking and playing. It's very true in the World Cup, a lot of foreign coaches. The same goes for the increasing number of players who between World Cups represent clubs away from home. They inject new qualities into their new team, grow from the experience, and are able to contribute even more to their home side when they return. In the process, they often become heroes in their adopted countries, helping to open hearts and broaden minds. I wish it were equally plain for all to see that human migration in general can create triple wins. Yeah, listen to this. For migrants, for their countries of origin, and for the societies that receive them. That migrants not only build better lives for themselves and their families, but are also agents of development, economic, social, and cultural, in the countries they go and work in, and in the homelands they inspire through new won ideas and know-how when they return. For any country, playing in the World Cup is a matter of profound national pride. For countries qualifying for the first time, such as my native Ghana, it is a badge of honor. For those who are doing so after years of adversity, such as Angola, it provides a sense of national renewal. And for those who are currently riven by conflict, like Côte d'Ivoire, but whose World Cup team is a unique and powerful symbol of national unity, it inspires nothing less than the hope of national rebirth. Which brings me to what is perhaps most enviable of all for us in the United Nations. The World Cup is an event in which we actually see goals being reached. I'm not talking only about the goals a country scores. I also mean the most important goal of all, being there part of the family of nations and peoples, celebrating our common humanity. I'll try to remember that when Ghana plays Italy in Hanover on the 12th of June. Of course, I can't promise I'll succeed. And that was from UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, writing about the importance of the World Cup. And yeah, you know, I couldn't have phrased it better. That's what it is. That's the magic of it. This world community of ours that we're all a part of. It's just really kind of neat. And by the way, Ghana lost that game to Italy 2-0. So yeah, it's more than just a game. It's this whole worldwide thing, and that's why I hope more people here take an interest. Okay, what else? We're not going to be taking phone calls tonight. There's a couple of reasons for that. Number one, we're, like I said, at 25% power. While I know that doesn't affect people on the internet, it does affect people in various other parts of Long Island. And unless you're right near the transmitter, I don't think you can even hear us very well. But apart from that, there's other reasons, too. Somebody mentioned to me, this is great. This is amazing. Someone mentioned the other day. Oh, well, by the way, Emmanuel, the dump button on the delay system that we just have installed, it's not working. Now, let me explain what that means. A dump button, when you use a delay system, first of all, you go into delay mode, which means that you say something, and then 6 seconds later, it actually comes out over the air. Well, we need that. We need that, unfortunately, because of the reign of terror that the FCC is imposing. And I'll get more into that in a moment. But what happens is that means you have 6 seconds to rescue if something happens. If someone says something bad, one of the seven dirty words, you have to get that off the air before it goes on the air. God forbid someone's some kid might hear that because they've never heard that before. It's got nothing to do with whether or not you planned it or it's an accident or it's in a song or something like that. You've got to get that off the air. But if the button doesn't work, if the button to dump, which basically wipes out the signal, is not working, you know what you're going to hear? You're going to hear this. The sound of a button being pressed. Actually, maybe you won't even hear that because... No, you will hear that because nothing's going to get erased. Yeah. So here we are facing $325,000 fines every time a particular syllable is uttered. And the 50-cent button doesn't work to protect us from that. So, yeah, you know, until I know for sure that button is working, and with the station going off the air and people running around trying to keep us just going, I'm not going to make any assumptions that anybody has the time to deal with this. But I think it underlines a very important point about the station, about the radio in general, that we're not robots, that we're not computers that can do everything with perfection. Occasionally mistakes happen. Now, if that button doesn't work, if that 50-cent button, I assume it's 50 cents, I don't know. If that really, really cheap button does not work, do we deserve a $325,000 fine because we weren't aware of it? I mean, I'm aware of it now, so I'm not going to try pushing it. I don't know how to test out to see if the button actually works. We're going to have to do that later. Now, there's an alternative, and they suggested this to me. I said, well, Manuel, you can still take calls. You just have to not use the remote. You've got to... you've got to actually get to the unit. Now, to give people an idea, the unit is over there. I pointed to the right. It's over across the desk and on the other side of a little mini corridor. Okay, so let's just assume for a second that someone has just said something bad. I'm going to try this because maybe I can do this. Maybe I'll have to do this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to... I'm going to have some advanced knowledge of this. So I'm going to pretend someone said something they weren't supposed to say on the air, and then I'm going to try and get to the delay machine in time. It's too bad the timer doesn't work. I can't see if I can actually make it in time. Okay. And, I won't have this much knowledge, so I'm just going to say, all right, someone just said something. Okay, I got to get over. Oh,
I don't even know which button to hit.
Which button do... You know, I knocked my chair over. This didn't work out because, you know, when I got over there, I made it in plenty of good time. I was able to reach much further than I thought. I hurt my hand, though. But there are three buttons there. There's the bypass button, there's the delete button, there's the record button, and then there's a green button that doesn't have anything on it. And then there's the power switch. Nothing that says dump, so I don't even know which button I'm supposed to hit. Okay, well, I learned something else. You know, see, you have to really go into these situations knowing what to do. Okay, so at least I know I can make it. And I'm sorry, folks, that's the only way to know is to test it. And if that didn't work, I was going to try running around, you know, basically getting up and running over there. I think I could probably do that, too. But it's pointless if I don't know which button to hit by the time I get over there. All right, so you see, these are the things that are going through our minds over here. Now, on June 15th, Bush signed legislation, that was last Thursday, that will cost broadcasters dearly when raunchy programming exceeds the bounds of decency. Now, what in hell does that mean? Nobody really knows. All they know is that there are certain words that aren't allowed, certain words that have been uttered many, many times on many, many stations, whether by accident or on purpose, whether because a button didn't work or because someone didn't hear when someone said it the first time or because it was appropriate to the context of the conversation. At a signing ceremony for the new law, increasing by tenfold the maximum fine for indecency, Bush said that it will force industry figures, I guess that's us, to take seriously their duty to keep the public airwaves free of obscene, profane, and indecent material. Oh, my God. For raunchy talk or a racy show of skin, which I guess applies only to television, the FCC can now fine a broadcaster up to $325,000 per incident. Well, you know, yeah, maybe we wouldn't get fined $325,000 if somebody said a bad word. But even if we got fined $35, it's still something that hurts the station. And what people, I think, have to realize is that we're doing the best we possibly can. Equipment breaks. Things are expensive for us to upgrade and maintain. And yet we're put under this this cloud of fear. You mess up, and not only will the station be hurt, but you might be financially liable yourself. Anyway, approval of the bill culminates a 2-year effort to get tough on sexually explicit material and offensive language on radio and television. And yes, it's all because of Janet Jackson's breast, which wasn't even completely visible. The FCC recently denied a petition of reconsideration from CBS-owned stations facing $550,000 in fines over the Jackson incident. Incredible. Like they knew that was going to happen. I mean, how do you possibly... How about the people in the stadium? What about all the children in the stadium? Who's going to help them? All those traumatized children. Because that's why we're doing this, right? Because people were traumatized. Because something bad happened over the airwaves. And children might have actually seen a breast from a distance that was covered up by something else. But yeah, you know, if you were there live, well, the ultimate public airwaves is sight, you know, light. Can't be polluting that with your filth, so someone must be accountable. So all the people in the stadium, sign on to a class action lawsuit. Yeah. Good God. The agency also handed down its biggest fine, $3.3 million, against 100 other CBS affiliates that aired an episode of the series Without a Trace that simulated an orgy scene. I would have liked to have seen it so much as I would like to have seen just what broadcast television considers an orgy in primetime. Somehow I don't think it was that risque. All kinds of complaints and fines are being handed out. But the thing that really gets me on this, the NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, the ones that are supposed to be representing the broadcasters and standing up to this kind of garbage, you know what they say? Do you know what their position on this is? Well, they should go after satellite and cable as well. Why just us? Yeah, let's impose it on everybody. And I think this is indicative of what the problem is all about. Instead of fighting things, we fight each other and try to make it so that everybody suffers. That's why you get candidates like Hillary Clinton running for president. Oh, ho, ho. Yes, well, okay. I said it. It's out there. That's why. That's one of the reasons why. That, I don't want to hurt myself jumping over the console. And I think the button might not be working, and I just don't want to risk it. And also, I'm afraid one of you is going to say something about the World Cup and ruin it for me. So, for those reasons. But I will read some listener mail, because we have all sorts of listener mail. Oh, my God. Die! Die, you bastard! Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Whew. Wow. I guess I should explain what just happened here. That's, Oh, boy. I'm all shaken up. Well, you see, it's the time of year where it gets warm. And every year when that happens, for some reason, I don't understand, there's one room of my house, in fact, it's the room that I stay in the most, where these little tiny ants just suddenly appear. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know why they're there. It's not the great outdoors, it's the great inside. And, you know, it starts off in the spring, usually I see one ant crawling across the desk, and I say, oh, great. And I don't like killing things. I really don't, not even bugs. Those of you out there who are religious, every bug is sacred too, right? I mean, don't they all have a unique soul or something? Or they're different. They can tell they're different. We think they all look the same, but ever watch ants? They communicate with each other. They know Randy from Joe, and they know when it's a red ant. They don't want anything to deal with them. They'll kill them. They'll fight wars. Ants will fight wars, even though they're all ants. We can learn a lot from them. They can tell the difference. So every ant is unique. So I feel guilty killing them. But I have to, you know, when they start popping up in front of me, I'm trying to do work and an ant is crawling on the desk. I gotta crush the guy. I'm sorry. I feel bad for it. I'm sure I'll pay for it at some point in the future. But for now, it's more convenient for me not to have an ant. But then it starts to get out of hand. And I find myself doing this every couple of minutes. And the other day, it really reached a pinnacle because I went and I got a sandwich from the deli, and there must have been something in the bag when I put it on the floor, because not more than 2 hours later, when I reached down to finally like take it into the trash can, there was a whole stadium full of ants that were on the ground, and somehow they had communicated to the entire ant community of the neighborhood that, hey, Emmanuel left a bag on the floor and there's something leaking at the bottom of it, so let's all come over and have a picnic. And I saw there was like a trail of ants. It was like this highway of ants just going across the room to apparently where they were getting in. And I said, you know, this is enough. This is just too much. I can't deal with this anymore. And so I got out the spray. Yeah, I have spray. I have spray. And I sprayed. And you know, not more than 3 minutes later, that highway was a highway of death. Yes, everybody on that highway was gone. I felt awful. Massacre. I just killed hundreds of life forms. And plus, the room kind of stunk of insecticide, but you know, I had to do work there, so I dealt with that as best I could. And then they started to come back. You know, after this, after I had sprayed, after I thought I had rid myself of this, they decided, you know what, we want in again. We don't care that you keep crushing us. We don't care that this poison gas gets sprayed occasionally. We don't care. We just want to hang out with you. And it's like this year they've declared war or something, because there's more of them than ever before, and it's only in that one room. I'm not saying there aren't other things going on in other rooms. There's one part where there are moths everywhere. Yeah, moths are crazy. turn on the light, and instantly, no matter where you are, you could be in the middle of a forest, moths suddenly jump to attention. Light, I must go to the light. What do they do the rest of the time? What are they doing? Just hanging out, hoping that a light one day turns on? Moths in the middle of the forest may never see a light, except for maybe the moon. I don't know if they fly to the moon, if they try. Or ticks. You walk through the forest and, yeah, you get a tick. That tick is hanging out on a plant, waiting for somebody or something to walk by so he can jump on them. That can't happen to every tick that exists. A lot of ticks must be just left at the altar, standing there on a plant, waiting for somebody to come by who never does. A lot of heartbroken ticks out there. So anyway, getting back to what just happened here, apparently one of the ants hitched a ride in the bag where I bring my stories, and I just imagine my horror when I took out a story, and there's one of those little ants, and I recognize them. You know, these aren't the big black ants. They never show up in the house, never. They know better. These are one particular colony. It's always the same color, always the same style, always the same size. And now they're here. Now they're following me everywhere I go. And I just can't have that. I'm having nightmares about these things. It reminds me, back when I lived in the big house over at the Cedars, occasionally, Walter, not the one who ruins the World Cup scores, the dog, Walter would occasionally be responsible for a flea infestation. And you'd have to bomb the house. Actually, we'd have to get professionals to bomb the house. Bomb meaning put an insecticide can in the middle of every room, leave the house for several hours. And there were times, though, where the flea situation was just so bad that they were biting us all over the place. And I remember going into New York City and realizing, my God, I still have fleas on me. I'm importing fleas. And New York's got this real problem with bed bugs as it is. Bed bugs are making a comeback, and apparently they can be passed on very, very easily just by shaking someone's hand. You can give them bed bugs. And bed bugs can live in your house without eating for a year. And then they'll jump on you. And you see people in New York throwing out their mattresses in a panic. If you see a mattress on the street, that's why it's there. They're very hard to get rid of. All right, what was I doing before this all happened? That was scary, folks. It really was, because it was like some kind of horror movie where suddenly the monster appeared. And I know they're waiting for me. They're waiting for me back home. And they probably heard about what just happened. Yes, we're going to read some listener mail, which is all crumpled up now. I loved your piece on the difference between British coverage of football and American coverage. A caller noted that in the American version sounded better over the radio because they talked more about what was going on, which is a fair point. For TV broadcasts, the BBC has the licenses for half the games, and ITV has the other half, as well as the BBC having the rights for all matches on the radio. When the game is being broadcast on the BBC, a digital TV user has the option to use the interactive options to select which commentary they wish to listen to. Well, that's brilliant. Which commentary? The annoying one or the not annoying one? You can either pick the low-key commentary that's being provided from the TV studio in the same way ITV broadcasts the football, or they allow you to listen to the BBC Radio 5 live commentary, which is more in-depth and detailed because it's also being broadcast over the radio live. That makes perfect sense. What a great idea. Let's see. Oh, yes. At the end of the show, you played Pet Shop Boys, which I really enjoyed. One comment I have, after listening to a lot of the older Brain Damage archives, is that you don't play enough music these days. It's really nice to listen back to shows from the 1980s and listen to the music and find some lost music gems. I fear that in the future, people listening to the 2000 archives... Do you mean 2000 archives or 2600 archives? I guess you mean archives from the year 2000 on? All right. We'll miss out on hearing what the music of the day was. So maybe you can play a bit more music. But I understand it's a hard balance to strike between getting information out, having a debate, and playing music when you've only got an hour to play with. Signed, Zen. Thanks, Zen, for the letter. And, of course, as you may have seen earlier in the show, some people don't like music being played, especially when you're talking. And it is a talk show, so we only have an hour. We try to play a musical gem at the end of every hour, and I think this hour is no exception. Maybe you'll like that. Yeah. We have other comments on... Actually, These letters are all kind of jumbled up here. But someone else wrote in about the very same thing. Ah, yes. Dear Emmanuel, I was surprised you didn't mention the most egregious aspect of ESPN's World Cup telecast, which is the fact, and I didn't know this, that their announcers aren't even in Germany. They're in a studio in Bristol, Connecticut, looking at the same images you and I are. If ESPN tried to do this with any other sport, they would be lambasted by media critics, but since soccer is still considered a foreign game in the U.S., nobody says a word, signed Lewis. Well, Lewis, thanks for revealing that. I had no idea. So they're sitting there watching television, broadcasting, commentating, is that a word? On the game, as if they were there. How can you announce a game that you're not at? You know, I'm always hearing the guy from England saying the reaction of the people sitting next to him. Oh, the people next to me really thought that was a goal. It just sounds so much better because he's there. No wonder these guys have no connection to what's going on. They're not there. You can't possibly, you don't even know when it's raining. You can't look around and see something that's not on the camera. How sad. And what I don't understand, why don't they simply defer to where it actually works better? That's what they do in Canada. And I'm lucky because I have a Canadian satellite dish. I can watch Canadian channels, and I watch TSN, which basically is, I think, half-owned by ESPN as it is. And they have their kind of low-key commentary with the retired soccer players and sportscasters, but it's not offensive somehow. They're just low-key, not hyper like they are here. And when it's time for the game, they switch over to the world broadcasters that the rest of the world is seeing. Because they know that's the way to have the game presented. Here's another letter on the same topic. I heard you guys mention this, and I realize how much it irritates me, too, especially after seeing some international feeds. I sent the following message to ESPN. They actually have a drop-down tab for banner/ticket in the complaints area. Apparently, a lot of people must complain. Subject, please remove ticker on all World Cup matches. To ESPN, we appreciate you removing the sports ticker on the bottom of the screen during the weekend matches, but how about removing it on all matches? It's bad enough the bar across the top of the screen is there, but then having one on the bottom, too? Please, please, please remove it. The international feeds just show the scores. That's all that is needed. You also don't need to waste a line on top of the screen telling us it's the 2006 FIFA World Cup. If we're watching, we know that. Thank you. Signed, Rear View Mirror. Couldn't have said it better myself. Why do you need to see something telling you what it is you're watching? Gee whiz, is this a baseball game or a soccer or a pool or what? I don't know. I'm stupid. I must be told everything. My God. As you can see, this affects lots of people. It may, you know, an incredible amount of people say, you know, Emmanuel, you shouldn't care about this. It's sports. You shouldn't care about this. It's television. I'm sorry, but that's a closed-minded, ignorant way of looking at things. Sports can be bigger than just a stupid game. It can be about bringing people together. It can be about learning different cultures and languages, meeting people from all over the world, sharing something in common, having fun together. Have you forgotten what that's like? And television? Yeah, you know what? There's some damn good things on television. I'm sick of people telling me I don't watch television. That's such a generalization. If I said I don't read books because I'm sick of Daniel Steele or something like that. Yeah, I'm not going to read Charles Dickens because it's a book. Yeah, I'm enlightened. The viral nature of TV is awful, and most of the crap on there is really awful. But there are some really also fine examples and ways that you can learn and change your community and become a better person because of something that's on a tube in front of you. But no, don't become a slave. Don't become a slave to anything. Okay, let's move on to a different subject. By continuing to repeat the acronym SUV on last week's program, even you, Emmanuel, have fallen for one of the most successful yet deceptive marketing ploys in recent history. The reason there are so many on the road today is due to our inept federal government, under influence of the auto industry classifying SUVs as light trucks suitable for passenger use. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. And signed Bill. Thank you, Bill, for writing in with that. I say SUVs simply to project an image so you know what I'm talking about. If I say light trucks, you might not know what that means. But yeah, they should not be called that. It's not right. It's not fair. It's not accurate. Oh, but boy, did I see an accident this week. Oh, my goodness. I was heading into the city. I got to tell you about this one. It didn't involve an SUV either, which was pretty amazing. Actually, no, it did. It did involve an SUV. not as an active participant, though. Let me explain. I was heading into the city. I was on Route 347 in one of the sections. The highways are expanding these days, and they're expanding without actually building them bigger. What they do is they simply expand a third lane onto what used to be the shoulder and then just make sort of a smaller shoulder that's half on the grass. And that's what they've done on this particular part of Route 347. And so we're heading into heading west in the leftmost lane. I'm not going to count the turn lane to the left of that because that doesn't play into the story. All right, so we're heading west in the leftmost lane, and everybody is stopped because of a traffic light further up the road. Now, it's not a traffic light immediately in front of us. There's actually another intersection immediately in front of us that doesn't have a traffic light. Okay? The light way in front is red. Everybody is kind of stopped. Now, here's what the jackass in front of me did, which is really, really stupid. He decides he's going to be a nice guy and actually back up a little bit so that this car that's coming in the opposite direction that wishes to make a left turn onto the intersection that doesn't have the traffic light can go through. Yeah, he thinks he's being a nice guy by backing up and letting this guy cut over because I guess in his mind, we're not moving, so might as well let somebody else go through. What he didn't think about, though, was that he should not be speaking for the two lanes of cars next to him that he can't possibly see. Yeah, now, immediately to the right is an SUV, actually. An SUV is stopped, which makes it impossible for him to be able to see past the SUV to see what that rightmost lane is doing to see if cars are moving or stopped. As it turns out, cars were moving. And I saw this because I turned around. I could not believe this guy was doing this. I turned around. I saw their cars moving in that lane. And I'm honking. I'm honking. I'm trying to... How do you tell somebody, abort, abort, don't go. Don't listen to the guy in front of me. Listen to me. I tried. It was like watching that truck crash into the bridge on the Northern State Parkway a couple of years ago. You know, you're not supposed to have trucks. I'm trying to stop them and just wails right into the thing. Well, it happened exactly like I feared it would. And I have to say the guy who really is stupid is the guy who took this person's word for it and said, oh, you must be Lord of the Road. You must know where every car is. You're waving me past something you can't even see, so therefore it must be safe. And he makes the left turn, and sure enough, as soon as he hits passes the rightmost lane, another car just slams right into him. And boy, I feel sorry for that guy, although he really shouldn't have been going that fast either because another rule, don't go wailing down a road where you are passing cars and you can't see if somebody is going in front of those cars, especially at an intersection. So a lot of people at fault here. But I just felt compelled when this happened to pull up next to the guy who had waved the person on and point an accusing finger at him and say, that was your fault. At which point this guy had a look of such fear on his face, he took off at about 70 miles an hour. The light was now green. And he must have thought that he was going to be charged with murder or something. I don't think anybody really got hurt. But in case they did, I did take down his plate because the idiot also had a personalized license plate, which is very easy to remember. Yeah, so a lot of things to learn there, a lot of lessons. Never race down a road where you can't see what's to the left or to the right. Don't wave people on when you don't know what's to the left or to the right yourself. And don't believe what people tell you on the highway because odds are it's probably not true. Oh dear, our time is up. And I didn't even get to the news. But I'm trying to avoid the news anyway, so I guess that sort of works out. All right then. See you later.
There's no song for the singer, no words for the tune. There's a mess in the message and a man on the moon. There's no plan in the planet, it's all gone berserk. There's a milk bottle shortage and the traffic light don't work. Lie down and be counted, don't take any more. Lie down and be counted. What are we standing for? But there's hope for the couple who stroll in the park. There's nuclear power to light up the dark. There's national health and ice in the fridge. And the occasion original cat on a motorway bridge. There's extended credit on easier terms. Something to kill or no household germ. There's sofas and armchairs and washing machines. Stars on Sunday, fish fingers and beans. Lie down and be counted. Don't take any more. Lie down and be counted. What are we standing for? There's no song for the singer, no words for the tune. There's a mess in the message and a man on the moon. There's no plan in the planet. It's all gone berserk. There's an everything shortage and the traffic lights still don't work. Lie down and be counted. Don't take any more.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.